Thanks, Sean. So this poem has a very long introduction that I'm going to keep short. This poem was written from the perspective of a man getting up on the morning of Easter Sunday 1916 and going to fight for his country. And I try to imagine what might be going through his head. It's called Restless Spirit. Goodbye, my darling asleep. Goodbye, my little son. I'm off to Dublin in the green of Ireland, my Ireland. I know, my love, this is the day that a lament for the lost and the right of man will breeze from Clare to here. I know, my love, this is the day that Derriere and Dingle Bay hear the call of bold Fenian men, James Larkin and Pádraig Pearson at the answer, from sweet Tralee to Skibbereen where the sun and a soldier's song is rising. Will we wrap the green flag around me, boys, and we shall overcome. So blow ye winds a dream of liberty, blow ye winds a Celtic symphony, and over Ireland all let the people sing, rebellion, freedom. Go home, you British soldiers, you'll never beat the Irish. And blow ye winds of providence to protect, so at our journey's end, when the boys come rolling home, or the women of Ireland see a soldier return, not a bunch of red roses on holy ground and bagpipe music, at a gravestone marked, here lies a soldier. Yes, blow ye winds of providence to protect, so at our journey's end, every soldier's son can hug the old man and know once more love's old sweet song. And blow ye winds of providence for the working man in Belfast and the boys of Fair Hill, who remembering the flight of the earls, Robert Emmet and the great hunger, will win freedom from the big, strong man. I know, my love, in Belfast and Botany Bay, Irish eyes are smiling, for this is the day the foggy dew in the valley of Knockanore and the gay Galtee Mountains sings a song for Ireland, my Ireland. I know, my love, this is the day that Waterford boys and Galway girls were in the green of Ireland, my Ireland, march to freedom. Yes, my darling asleep. Yes, my little son, this is the day. So goodbye, Irene. Goodbye, lovely Johnny. I'm off to Dublin with James Connolly and Michael Collins. We're in the green of Ireland, my Ireland, to say farewell to an Ireland unfree.
Thank you very much, Dan. Joe Johnston.
Ray Johnston.
Hello there. We've come all the way from Berlin.
Oh, wow.
And we've fallen in love with Cork. And I want to read from this little book that's 99 years old, called The Glamour of Cork. Before the glaciers come, is the name of this. The fish on Shandon alive and swimming off gaily to Sunday's well. St. Luke's Church, full fathom 9 under the flowing stream. Blackrock Castle itself too deep for any worm to find. Monkstown, for all its beauty, as yet undreamed. And at last, out there 3 miles or so past Roach's Point, that Lee River sparkling as it meets the sea. O world, O life, O time, what charmers these geologists be, who now with stratum and fossil and shaft can prove this aerial lee in pre-glacial days of the infinite years BC.
Thank you very much, Joe. Next is Marcel Kroner. You're very welcome.
Thank you. So this poem is called In Solitude and in fact dedicated to Cork. was written last year, and it fits very good to what Joanne read before. In solitude, everything flows while water composes the universe, falling from heaven in order to resurrect into this passion. A pulse circulating between air and earth, knowing how premature conquerors need to breathe and be fed. Need to breathe and be fed. Hence they conquered you from the sea, drifting with famished wooden bellies, and collided with your stream, which, previously unnamed, was rebellious and self-willed, floating its way in solitude. O holy water, your image floods my mind. Who transformed your physical wisdom into a ruled but disobedient river? Early men followed the course you had long before determined, street of marshes, bounded by hills, which with its blessed territory, the great rebel island. You do look different now, and sometimes your outreach is an outcry towards the truth of human spirit. And yet, a river so loved and embraced will note the civilian's poetic license. Tunes are still written for recovery, that your landscape will hum alongside the passage of time, when our successor find a better way to live and walk on earth, as long as they have breath to do so.
Thank you very much, Marcel. And next is Megan Cronin.
This poem basically was the kick I needed after a while. I've been having a bit of a crisis, a writing crisis, and then I hurt my knee, so I couldn't roller skate anymore until I'm better. So I was kind of like, who am I anymore if I can't write and I can't roller skate? And then, ironically, I said this 2 weeks ago because I had a really weird dream, and I wrote about the dream in the poem, and I think that kind of started me off writing again. But it's funny to know as well, because tonight is a year that I've been going to a bail as well.
Happy anniversary!
So it all fits in quite well with this poem. But yeah, I'll just get on with it anyway. So yeah, sorry to people that have heard it already 2 weeks ago. Trisha, cheers. Anyway, I'll get on with it. I had a dream last night that I was dying. Not that I was physically sick or anything, no, I was trying to die. So I woke up this morning not feeling quite right, because dreaming of dying is not something you take light. In this dream, 3 goodbye letters myself I did write, with instructions and advice before I bid a good night. And I was trying to find a simple way to do it, one where I wouldn't feel much or wait more than a minute. I was advised to go to a breathing class in a pool, where we held our breath underwater for a minute or two. Once I learned what to do, I had to hold it until my mind stopped thinking and my body was still. Nobody questioned my mission, just accepted it and let me go. It was just something I had to do. Now, before you all get scared of what this dream was trying to declare, I looked up its meaning, and it seems that dreaming of my own death is something quite appealing, as it signifies a transformation. A transformation devoutly to be wished, it seems. Enough my mind decided to explore it in a dream. When I was researching this, there was 2 things I had to find. The first was why I was dreaming of trying to die, and the second was the cause of the intended death and why. Upon researching why I dreamt of such a demise, I learned it was time for me to say my goodbyes to my old self and make room for the new, because sometimes it's just something you have to do. In order to emerge stronger than before, both physically, mentally, and emotionally too, you must destroy what is left of the badness that's inside of you. This led me to question, what exactly was I changing? And only 2 things came to mind, writing and roller skating. This time last year, I began my writing career. Not literally, of course, but I did start right here. and over the course of a few months to a year, I wrote a couple of poems that kicked me into gear. But recently I've been struggling to write something new. I was looking for a sign, something of a breakthrough. And it wasn't for the lack of inspiration, but the fear of living up to my own expectation. I did try write again, but with a touch of hesitation. When you write something great, there's a mix of feelings. The first is accomplishment and a sense of healing. The second comes much later, the sense of how can I write something as good or even greater than something people liked and I loved even more. You give yourself a pass so you won't try to write like before. Back in March I played a game called Roller Derby. I don't remember how, but I fell and hurt my knee. I missed a couple of matches, maybe two or three. Couldn't train, but I was still a coach of the new fresh meat. At first I was afraid of how unfit I'd be, but then I had to focus on my recovery. At one point I thought, that's it, I'm done, I quit, until I remembered how fun it is to hit. Now, although I still can't skate until I'm fully fixed, I'm working on my nutrition and other bits of fitness. I'll return a beast and be thankful that I did, because when I return, they'll call me the comeback kid. Thanks.
That's gorgeous, Megan. That's like a love letter to all of us. Thank you. I can follow that, would you? My favorite parts of song are the lips parting from the mouth of a flute, the clan of wood when fingers slip on a guitar, the mahogany wood groan of a cello, the string slip of a violin, the parting of silence of a piano. What you call the absence of sound, wherever the human fits in. Thanks.
Thank you, Philip. Next up, please, is Patricia Walsh. It's called Reasonable Pieces. Voting yourself out of existence, heating through arguments, saying the worst, loving at the end point, disgustingly yours, far from minions, audience scenario, a slam down phone slipping past sarcasm. Impoverished to a fault, knowing when to get out, a license to be mastered at will. This cold blanket socializes a detriment. I don't care if you're lonely, slipping out otherwise, making your own luck imperative in this day. Pockmark out, making a statement. Overnight ice hunting over detrimental love. Politely asked to move on, groups allowing. The primal horde, after all, of drinking coffee. Spewing poison over relaxation, handheld practice. Not to worry, handheld over earshot. Overhearing laughter that is purely one's own. Overdressed in sunlight, lying on the lawn. Taunting the tainted soul over history. Specifics untold, scarred for time forever. Pass the exam, succeed into this vortex. Private altercations spell exclusion from reality. Some skin separates a grim revenge. Flaring soul intending death, sick of it now. Promised suicide, revenges the excavation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patricia. And next up is Charles Clark.
No. Last week I read a poem about Mexico. But I've got two important things. One, Mexico is often thought, poor Mexico so far from God, so near to the United States. And the other thing about Mexico, far less well known, is that the cultural capital of Mexico is Paris. Well, it's well known. Also, I generally thought, partly because they both have pilgrim, those things.
Pyramids?
Pyramids. That there's some connection between Mexico and Egypt. But that's doubtful. That has to be doubtful. I'm very short time here. Very short. From an old land in Egypt. Pharaoh lifted a Nubian dancing girl, his spoon, and stirred his lentils, pleasantly gazing at his queen and sister.
Thank you, Charles. Next up, can we please have Cliff Wedgbury?
I'll read you a poem called Janet and the Girl in the Window. It takes us back to Christmas Eve 1964. I was a junior clerk for a firm of solicitors in an ancient house off of Fleet Street. And the house had a heritage plaque, a blue heritage plaque on the wall outside saying Samuel Pepys lived here. And I shared a first floor office with a boy called John, who was a bit of an alcoholic. He used to keep a bottle of red wine in the top drawer of his filing cabinet, hidden away. And Christmas Eve, he went away early with a headache. So I went straight to the top drawer of his filing cabinet and I took about half a bottle of red wine and I drank the lot in 5 minutes. And then strange things began to happen. Salisbury Court, Fleet Street, the abode of Samuel Pepys, my home for a while in 64, an 18-year-old clerk running around the city streets, much as Samuel had done 300 years before, chasing pretty girls and eating salt beef rolls in alleyway pubs. My first floor window looked across a narrow space to another window, in which a beautiful girl sat typing all day from 9 to 5. She had long dark hair and the proud looks of a flamenco dancer. I sat at my desk, surrounded by legal documents, and tried my best to work while slowly falling in love. She knew I was looking, but was careful not to let our eyes connect. I hated my helpless glances, drawn through the dusty panes towards her beauty. I turned my desk around, piled files high on the sill. But alas, I still found my eyes straying over the barricades to no man's land. Then, one Christmas Eve, full of wine, I dressed myself in a barrister's wig and gown and marched around that small empty room, delivering a strange speech to a fictitious jury and waving my arms like a windmill in the storm. From the corner of my eye, I could see that the beautiful girl had left her desk and was standing at her window, laughing. I waved and blew her a kiss. She moved her hand to her lips, and across that empty space, her sweet kiss flew in return with a love that stole my heart in the season of goodwill, as the pale sun sank that evening behind Ludgate Hill. And then Janet Cornerby in the stationery cupboard, Christmas Eve, just before 6. She was full of Bacardi, and I was full of lust. An anemic office boy with pimples full of pus. But in the darkness, she didn't seem to mind, even when I held her behind in my sweaty hands. That only came looking for some foolscap. "You're in my little trap," said Janet, breathless between kisses, French and wet. Though I knew I'd never get any further than my tongue between her teeth, which was really rather a relief, with her husband waiting at reception, and him a 12-stone lighterman from Tilbury with a forest of hair growing from his ears, and me, an underweight, asthmatic little chap. the one who went looking for a ream of foolscap. Olé, olé, olé.
And so this is a poem that I wrote my friend Anna. Like, we were driving back from Limerick and in Stan's car. And we were just, I don't know.
Better be getting a royalty payment from that.
And I don't know, we were just like both talking about our love lives all day, and I'll just get into the poem and you'll hear the story. How about that? So, we travelled 2 hours to Limerick to perform Anna's newly published poem, All 47 Seconds. For hours we strolled through shafts of solstice gold cascading on Limerick's pavements, finding terraces to drink pints of cider, rambling about our love lives, spiking said pints of cider with plumes of ink, inspiring poetry stains on our tongues and teeth. As the day closed, we became 2 drunk poets riding home in the back of Stan's car. We turned our love lives into poems, transforming night skies into verse and lines. One solitary star hung in the sheets of black. What constellation is that? John, I called it. Gary, she called it. We laughed in the night at our love desperation. Our twinkling bright constellation ignoring us. As we rode through the night, laughing at ourselves, we began plotting witchcraft spells, scratching their names into red wax, burning candles down to the wick, until they loved us hopelessly. I say I will wear gold teeth, Anna calls me gypsy. We laugh that I'll be walking streets, calling out in my Bucharesti tongue, 12-fingered sorceress. And our solitary stars are forgotten. We counsel each other in the back of Stan's car and deliver hard truths. We both refused, our fingertips gripping onto the idea of them loving us. And the moment passed and the deluge of light pollution cleared, and suddenly there were 1,000 star-spangled lovers twinkling, and I pointed them out and our hearts smiled, and I felt that the smoky longing had left my chest, and though the future was uncertain, I saw the solstice light and the midnight sun, and we felt hope that we would find someone.